Beheaded.
Main Street? Why?
Alone after dark? I smiled and tried to keep my voice light. You don't think I'm safe to walk a mile these days? I'm starting to think you're not safe waking up in the morning.
Ha ha.
A small smile formed on his lips. It just so happens I'm headed your way. You want a lift?
I dithered for a moment, feeling certain this was some sort of ambush. I don't know. Grady leaned out the window, giving me 100% of his attention.
I have a confession.
Yeah? I took a step forward. He dipped his chin in affirmation. The vibe around him was charged and strange.
I was on my way to see you.
Me? I asked, utterly baffled. Why? I shuffled closer to his door. I supposed it wasn't about Sam Smart, even though Grady had said he'd come over after that mess yesterday and then never showed. My heart rate spiked. What if someone else was dead? We'd have to change the town name if people kept dropping every few days. Charm wouldn't really be appropriate anymore. What happened?
Nothing.
His blank cop face turned a little vulnerable.
I was going to invite you to the street party.
I rolled the words over in my head, trying to make sense of why he wanted to do that. Why? I asked again, this time with a blush. Seriously, why? I thought to myself. He worked his jaw.
I heard some folks saying it's a good time, but I don't know anybody. Not really. Feels like everyone I've met this week has been in an official capacity. They're starting to look at me funny. I figured you could show me around, introduce me to folks as your friend, not just the new detective. Teach me how this place works. You might not believe this, but I've never been anywhere like Charm.
You need me, I said with a fresh smile.
I just thought it would be nice to go together.
I cocked my hip and crossed my arms, gloating a little. So I'm not always a big pain in your keister. Admit it. Grady narrowed his eyes.
Get in, Swan.
I rounded the hood of his truck and climbed into the passenger seat, feeling unreasonably victorious. Are Denise and Denver meeting you there? Denver will love all the junk food, and there will be live music and lots of light-up toys and glow sticks and stuff like that. He waited while I buckled in, then pulled carefully away from the curb.
They're there now.
I gave him a cursory look. Without you? Why? He slid his eyes my way.
I was coming to get you.
A strange new idea formed in my head. Is this a date? I'm just asking so I know.
Do you want it to be?
I twisted toward him, evaluating his expression. He hadn't answered my question. He'd just asked me a new one, as if I wouldn't notice the evasion. I thought you didn't like me, I finally said.
What?
He widened his eyes in what could only be faux shock.
Why?
I don't know. I'm a clumsy mess, butting into your investigation, being a distraction, making your job harder, stuff like that. Or so I hear. It was confusing, and I felt half nauseated by an attack of middle school type butterflies. I pried my tongue off the roof of my mouth. Basically, I make trouble everywhere I go.
True,
he grinned. I got comfy in my seat and watched the scenery rolling past my window, enjoying the fun twist my evening had taken. We rode in companionable silence for a bit until we reached Main Street. The street had been blocked off with wooden barricades. Ropes of white light swooped between street lamps over the pedestrian-filled roads. Grady parked in the grass a couple of blocks away, as close as possible to the festivities. We'd have to walk from there. Music and chatter floated on the evening breeze as I slid down from his cab. He met me on his side of the truck and cast me an appreciative gaze.
You look nice tonight. Did I tell you?
No. Did I also look floored, rattled, and at a complete loss for words? Because that's how I felt.
Well, I meant to,
he said. Thanks. I fought a goofy blush. A pair of little girls ran through the grass beside us, sparklers flaring, bare feet flying, and pigtails streaming behind them. Their parents were lost in conversation several steps behind them, carrying two pairs of pink flip-flops and two half-melted ice cream cones. What must that be like? I wondered, recalling all the times I'd brought my grandma and two great-aunts to Parents' Day. Two normal parents making regular family memories.
I wouldn't know,
Grady said. The sadness in his tone reminded me that he'd had a normal life once. I let my eyes slide shut for a quick beat. Sorry, I didn't mean... He'd lost his wife too soon, too harshly. He could have known what it was like to raise a child with a partner, if fate hadn't been so cruel.
It's fine.
No, I said, stopping to look at him with determination. What happened to your family isn't all right. It sucks. A lot, actually. He nodded.
You're right.
I nodded back, then fell into step at his side.
Thank you,
he said softly. I walked a little closer to him after that, feeling strangely protective of a man who clearly didn't need protecting. We joined the crowd inside the first wooden barrier. Families filled the sidewalks, wiping their children's sticky mouths and bouncing babies on their hips. Couples laughed and leaned against one another, lost in private moments no one else could understand. Grady nodded toward the side of the street lined with vendor stalls.
Where should we start? Funnel cakes? Ice cream? Maybe a little steak on a stick?
I'm not eating anything that comes on a stick, I said. You could put your eye out. He nudged me toward a vendor cart with his elbow.
How about some delicious fried butter?
No, I laughed. Just no.
Fried pickles?
How about a lemonade? I countered. A drink with a lid and straw seemed like the way to go. It would be significantly harder to spill on myself or get stuck in my teeth. Grady raised his eyebrows at the lemonade line.
Look at all those people in line for a drink. You need a booth at this event.
I smiled. The town council had settled the street fair plans long before I'd finished unpacking and months before I'd had time to open up my shop. I miss the deadline for vendor applications this year, but next spring, Sun, Sand, and Tea will be represented. He lifted a palm and I gave it a high five.
Everly!
Mr. Waters came in our direction, pulling a cart of light-up toys and glow sticks from Molly's Market. There were flashing necklaces around the brim of his hat. Hi, Mr. Waters! I gave him a squeeze. Love the new look! I took a blinking pinwheel from the cart and blew on it to see the pedals spin.
Who's your friend?
He asked. Him? I turned to be sure no one else had joined us. That's Grady. Had he not met Grady? Grady lifted a hand and they shook.
I'm Detective Grady Hayes. I'm new to Charm. Miss Swan here has agreed to show me around and introduce me.
Clearly, I was off to a poor start. Mr. Waters' lips parted in apparent shock.
Aren't you the one who insinuated she poisoned the tea?
He stared at me.
That's him, right?
Yep, I puffed again on the pinwheel. I'm surprised you haven't met.
Why would we meet?
Mr. Waters asked.
I'm not in any trouble. Unlike you,
he added with a teasing smile. I'm not in trouble at the moment, I informed him. Grady pulled a money clip from his pocket and extracted a business card.
I'd actually plan to drop in on you and your wife tomorrow. Would you give me a call when you have some time?
A group of kids with cash in hand giggled their way up to the blinking cart of toys, so Grady and I stepped away, allowing him to handle the crowd. We moseyed to the end of the lemonade line. Why do you want to talk to Mr. Waters and his wife? Grady stared ahead at the menu board. Small, medium, large. Not exactly worth studying. Hey, I batted his hand, which was dangling at his side. What was that about back there?
I'm just following a lead,
Grady said, attention still fixed on the three-item board. Yeah, right. A couple carrying hot popcorn and cotton candy drifted past, and my mouth watered. The rich, buttery scent tickled my nose so delectably I nearly forgot what I was saying.
I went out today, looking at the area around the little libraries after reading Amelia's report.
I softened my expression,
Grady had news, and he was going to share it. I found a new frying pan in one of the public beach trash cans between the library where you confronted the kids and your place. The tags were still attached, and there was blood and hair on the back.
My heart skittered, and my hand flew up to touch my barely concealed goose egg.
So I ran the numbers from the tag and learned it was in a shipment sent to Mr. Waters' store. I'd planned to talk to him tomorrow about it. Plus, the Waters have been in Charm for 35 years and run the busiest store in town. I hope they'd have some personal insight to offer.
I gave him my most serious face. When were you going to tell me about the frying pan?
Tonight.
He sighed.
I'd hoped you'd consent to a DNA swab so we can match the blood and tissue on the pan to you. Until we know it was the weapon used to attack you, it's not worth anything.
My stomach buckled and rolled. I couldn't tell if it was because Grady had found the weapon used to assault me, or because he apparently only asked me to come to the street fair to fill me in on the details. A man in a paper hat leaned over the lemonade stand counter.
Can I take your order?
Grady pushed me closer to the window and ordered two lemonades. I was still trying to figure out when we'd gotten to the front of the line. Grady paid and handed one bright yellow cup to me. Thank you. The icy sweetness loosened a wad of bunched muscles along the back of my neck. You can do the DNA test. If that pan was the weapon used to hurt me, then I want its owner found. He sipped and nodded.
Good. Thank you. We couldn't pull any fingerprints from it, but I know where it came from, so this isn't over yet. With Waters' records, we might be able to find the buyer through credit card receipts. If the purchase was cash, we can use the timestamp on the register tape to check surveillance footage from nearby shops and look for shoppers leaving the market.
He bumped his cup to mine.
Tossing the pan in a public trash receptacle was a sloppy mistake. Here's to soon-solved cases.
I tapped my cup to his with a pang of disappointment in my heart. I'd hoped I was right about this being a date. Still, I was thankful for the progress on his investigation. Whoever had knocked me out with a perfectly good frying pan should be punished. We headed back into the mash of people, my tummy flipping for new reasons now. Grady had a lead that could take him to my attacker. It was the thing I'd been praying for. Amelia's laugh caught my ear and turned me around. I bounced on my toes, looking for her outside her bookshop. She was surrounded by a half dozen familiar faces, all smiling wildly. Come on, I said, hooking one of my arms with Grady's. There's my buddy Amelia with a bunch of your new neighbors and friends. He put on a brave face as I dragged him into the little crowd. 2 hours later, I was exhausted from laughter, having run into everyone I'd ever known in Charm and loving the blessed nostalgia. Grady was witty and pleasant, but clearly distracted. No one seemed to notice but me. Standing beside him, I felt each twitch and thread of tension. He was never in the moment, seemingly hyper-aware of everything. He continually scanned the area, for what I couldn't say, but it made me feel safe for the first time in days. Afterward, he walked me to my house, leaving his truck in the grass along Ocean Drive, where he'd been boxed in by others who'd come out to have fun. I had a good time tonight, I told him.
I'm glad. Me too. I can't say I'll remember half those names tomorrow, but I'll try.
I wouldn't be surprised if you can't. You were only half there, I said. Surprise crossed his face.
It was that evident, huh?
To me. Amelia's little library caught my eye. Instinct told me something was wrong. Hold that thought, I said. I want to peek in on this so I can report back to Amelia. The window was dark and I couldn't see any books inside. Had they all been borrowed? I inched closer, bending at the waist and peering inside.
Oh!
I growled, yanking the door open. A flood of sand and seawater washed out, splashing onto my tank top, jeans, and feet. Ah! I tried to shut the door again, but the water kept coming, and Amelia's books fell onto the ground in a ruined heap. Jerks! Grady handed me a handkerchief before pulling out his phone to capture a couple of pictures.
A bubble of laughter rocked through me as I examined the crisp white hanky. What could I possibly do with the tiny scrap of material when I looked like I had just washed up on the beach? What? He tucked his phone away. I opened the little cloth in front of my ruined outfit and held it near the dark smear of sand and water for comparison. Grady began to laugh, and I started all over again.
Right. Sorry.
I linked my arm with his and groaned. This week is not my best. He tipped his face down toward mine, glancing at me sincerely.
It hasn't been my worst.
I turned away with a smile. Another round of giggles caught in my throat over my ruined outfit versus his perfect hanky. We continued on in snatches of laughter, though it wasn't funny at all. I used the handkerchief to dry my tears. We should take a look at the other boardwalk library just in case.
Deal.
100 yards later, a pair of puffy-haired silhouettes appeared, toting buckets toward the next little library. I lifted a finger in their direction. Look, I think those could be the boys I chased last night. I took a step forward, debating whether I could reach them before they saw me coming this time. At least with Grady, I wouldn't be outnumbered.
Wait.
Grady held a hand in front of me and turned his phone over.
Let them go. I'll have someone meet them at their next hit.
My eyes went wide. Grady, I think they saw who pushed me in the marsh. They could know who the killer is. He froze for a second, then burst into action, running full speed toward the little vandals. I couldn't have caught him even on my bike. I walked to my porch steps, torn. On the one hand, I wanted to see him take down the little creeps. On the other hand, I didn't want to still be covered in sand and seawater when he came back. Pride won. I hurried up the steps, prepared to do a fast wardrobe change and de-sanding. A shadow moved on my front porch, and I started. It only took a moment to recognize Lucinda Payne carrying my cake pan and wearing a frown.
I believe you left this at my house.
I squinted at Grady's now tiny figure in the distance. But he'd be right back. Then he could see it was her that approached me this time and not the other way around. Hopefully my cake pan appearing at her home wasn't grounds for that restraining order.
How can you be sure that's mine?
I hedged. She flipped it over to showcase my name written in marker on a patch of masking tape. Labeling dishes, my signature move.
Oh, right.
I climbed the front porch steps and opened the door. Won't you come in for a glass of tea? Maggie screeched up the front steps and into my shop with a hiss, and I pressed a palm to my racing heart.
Ignore her, I told Lucinda. She's just mad that she's getting a bath,
I announced the second sentence extra loudly into the empty room. Lucinda didn't look like she cared. In fact, she kind of looked like she'd rather push me down the steps than enter my shop. I took the empty cake pan.
I hope you weren't waiting long.
No. The walk was hard on me. I figured I might as well wait. If leaving, then I'd have to come back.
I'm sorry, I told her with utmost sincerity. I'd had a great night, and I didn't want to ruin it. This was my fresh start. I'm sorry for attending your party uninvited, and for rubbing you the wrong way since we met. I wish we hadn't gotten off on the wrong foot. But we're going to be neighbors now, so...
I let the sentence hang. How about some tea?
Her shoulders drooped and her furrowed brows rose with defeat.
Fine, but only one glass and no funny business.
I rolled my eyes as I flipped the lights on inside and let her pass. Deal. That goes for you, too, I joked. Apparently, I'd be wearing my sand-crusted outfit a little while longer. Making up with a crotchety old lady was not exactly how I'd hoped my night would end. Chapter 22. I set a pair of napkins on the counter. Lucinda looked at them with visible skepticism.
You'll understand if I'm hesitant to try your tea.
Sure, I bit back a grimace. But I assure you, there's no reason to be nervous.
I filled 2 jars with ice, setting the cubes afloat with a flood of strawberry tea. I stuck a sprig of fresh mint in each, then set the jars on the napkins. "Maybe you'd like to hear about the history of my iced teas," I suggested. "It might help you understand why I'd never use my recipes to cause trouble." Lucinda didn't answer, but remained just inside the door, clutching her necklace in one hand and pressing her big quilted handbag against her chest with the other. I could almost sympathize with her. How would I feel in her shoes? I opened the fridge and stared at the contents. Good food and great tea fixed many things. Maybe it could become the foundation for a middle ground between 2 women at odds. "How about some fresh fruit salad?" I asked over one shoulder. "It's fantastic with sweet tea." "Might be even better with my strawberry tea." She shuffled forward reluctantly, but eventually climbed onto a seat at the counter and arranged her purse on top. All in all, it seemed like acceptance to me. I prepared 2 bowls of fruit and joined her. "You see, my family has been on this island for generations, and the recipes I make today come from them. The foods and teas are part of our legacy. Some say the women of my family have been in Charm since the town was settled. Can you believe that? In 300 years' time, there has always been a Swan woman here."
"Not really, no."
I chuckled at her unbridled snark. "Me either. Sometimes. Other times?" I tilted my head left, then right. "I think maybe." Lucinda fiddled with her necklace. When she caught me waiting for her to say something more, she waved at the stove.
"I like hot tea," she said.
"Okay." I filled a kettle with water and set it on the stove before turning around and smiling. "Earl Grey okay?" Honestly, I could use the additional caffeine. I was as tired as I'd ever been, and my week had taken a hard toll. Her eyes were wide as if I'd startled her.
"Yes. Now, go on. You were telling me about your family history here."
"My great-aunts like to say we moved here from Salem following the witch trials, which were simply too heartbreaking to bear." I frowned, imagining the horror. "They tried to stop the drowning and burnings, but the will of a sacred community was stronger than the power of a good cup of tea. The Swans couldn't stand the tension, animosity, and accusations, not to mention all those young women tortured and lost. For what?" I felt my chest swell with pride as I told the story. Maybe there was a little of Aunt Clara in me after all. "Accusations are powerful weapons, don't you think?" I tossed a meaningful look in Lucinda's direction. "I learned that lesson recently."
"Detective Hayes said the poison was in your tea."
"I know." I gave a noncommittal shrug. "And maybe it was. But I don't know who put it there. It wasn't me. Detective Hayes knows that now. He said so."
"He did?"
She raised her brown, penciled-on brows.
"Who do you suppose he's looking at as a suspect now?"
"I don't know." I pressed the tines of my fork into a slice of orange, dodging the little spray of juice. "I didn't ask, and he didn't say." Did he have a new suspect? I'd been so thankful to hear my name was cleared and so torn up by Sam's death that I'd forgotten to ask Grady who could have done it. Anyway, that was off topic. "What's important here is that you know I would never do anything to harm another living creature or damage my family's name." I lifted my glass in a single-sided toast and sucked the contents down by a quarter. The taste smacked on my lips and tongue. Something wasn't right. Did the mint and the fruit salad create too much contrast? It wasn't like me to be wrong on these things.
"Is something wrong?"
Lucinda asked, lifting her drink for inspection and giving it a jostle.
No.
I took another long drink to prove it. Then I slid off my stool and went to find something that would go better with the tea. "Do you like almond pound cake?" I asked, hoping she wouldn't try the tea and an orange slice combo like I had. "I made this to go with Hannah's rhubarb jam. Do you know the goat lady?" She sniffed her tea, then took a reluctant sip, eyes locked on me.
"Not really. She's a farmer, right? That's not really my thing."
I bobbed my head.
Lucinda wore the high-maintenance look like a Medal of Honor, which was possibly the way I wore my flip-flops. I set a slice of pound cake before her. Another family recipe. The water will be ready soon, if you'd prefer a hot cuppa.
I'm diabetic, she said, pushing the cake away. Hot tea will be fine.
Of course. My throat tightened with memory and emotion as I recalled arguing pointlessly with Mr. Payne. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I shook my head, trying to clear my thoughts.
What's wrong?
She leaned away from the counter as if I might be highly contagious. Mr. Payne always asked about the sugar content and everything. I'd assumed it was him who watched his diet.
No.
Sadness drew a path over her tired face, pulling and tugging at the corners of her eyes and mouth.
That's me.
She wiped the corner of her eye.
He was always fussing about my health, thinking I didn't take good enough care. It's part of what broke us up a few years ago.
She drew lines in the condensation on her glass.
I've been doing better. He knew, and we were working things out. I was taking care of him more and more instead of the other way around.
I pushed my napkin to her, and she dabbed at another escaping tear. Was Mr. Payne unwell? What did she mean by saying that she had been caring for him? Her milky eyes snapped back to mine, grief replaced by distrust once again.
How are you feeling?
She asked. Honestly, not my best. The night, maybe the whole week, had taken a toll, and fatigue tugged incessantly at my limbs and eyes. My heart rate hadn't settled since finding Lucinda on the porch, and my thoughts were more blended than my smoothies.
Fine. Your cheeks are red and your skin is pale.
She circled a finger at my face.
And there's some sweat on your forehead.
I checked. She was right. I couldn't see the redness, but I felt the heat then. And my fingertips came back damp from beneath my bangs.
Whew, tough night, I guess.
My phone buzzed with a text from Grady. I grabbed it off the counter and carried it across the room to see what he learned.
Will you excuse me? I just need to check this.
Steam puffed from the kettle on the stove as I passed.
Looks like we'll have tea soon.
I swiped my thumb over the screen, bringing his message front and center, leaning against the far wall on the opposite side of my counter from Lucinda, careful to shield the incoming information.
Caught the boys. Stay put. I'm headed your way.
I frowned at the lack of detail.
Just one more minute,
I told Lucinda.
That was Detective Hayes.
I dialed his number and waited. He'd caught the boys, but who were they? Lucinda's expression was peculiar, but I couldn't place its meaning.
I hope everything's all right,
she said, stroking the large blue bauble on her necklace.
Maybe you should lie down now and talk to him later,
she suggested. My knees wobbled. The phone connected.
Hayes,
Grady barked.
Hey,
I started.
You can't tell me half a story. What did they say?
My speech slurred slightly, and I ran a hand over my numbing lips.
Sorry, I'm feeling weird.
A drop of sweat slid along my temple to my jaw, then dripped onto my shirt. I braced a hand on the counter in an effort to remain upright. My hazy mind dimmed, and my tongue attempted to double in size.
Are you home now?
He asked.
Yeah. Lucinda stopped by and I made a snack, but now I'm wondering if last night's events are catching up with me. I'm so tired.
He swore under his breath.
Don't move.
An engine roared in the background.
I'm 3 minutes out.
My raggedy cat crept along the counter in Lucinda's direction. Her lips pulled back in a hiss. My knees wobbled. Spots danced on the periphery of my vision.
Grady,
I whispered, fear striking against my tightening heart.
Something's wrong with me.
Damn it, Swan,
Grady snapped. Lucinda Payne shoved you in the marsh that night.
Chapter 23. I turned slowly back toward Lucinda, who was still seated quietly at my counter, a small smile on her puckered lips.
Everything all right?
No, I answered breathlessly. The phone tumbled from my hands. I knelt down and swept it off the floor with bumbling fingers.
Grady caught the kids filling Amelia's little libraries with sand.
The call had disconnected.
And he called to report that to you?
I nodded, my chest constricting with each move of my chin. Lucinda had pushed me into the marsh.
Did that mean she'd also killed her ex-husband?
And Sam Smart? Why?
Was she the one threatening me all along? The one who hit me with a frying pan?
I touched the wrap covering my bump.
I didn't realize the two of you were so close.
She clucked her tongue in distaste.
Calling you at home at this hour? That man has only been in town a week. It's not very professional.
My tummy rolled and pitched. I knew in my core that it was all true. Lucinda had been behind everything from the start. She'd killed her ex-husband, and she'd let the town blame me for it while she played the victim. She'd even had the audacity to be mad at me. Now she was sitting in my cafe, pretending she was afraid to taste my tea and judging Grady for our friendship. I shuffled toward her on sheer indignation.
He's a nice guy, I said. We got to know one another while I was being investigated for murder.
She pulled her chin back, clearly appalled by the bluntness of my statement. I opened my mouth to tell her Grady was on his way for a visit, but the floor tilted and my stomach lurched. I grabbed for the counter with sweat-slicked hands. My head dropped forward and my eyes pinched shut, waiting for the world to stand still again.
You did this to me, didn't you?
Lucinda scooped Maggie into her arms.
I think you're confused. Why don't you finish your tea?
The sight of my nearly empty jar sent a tidal wave crashing in my gut.
You poisoned me with my own tea?
The words were like tiny flares suddenly illuminating the obvious. No wonder the flavor combination had been so off. I never make mistakes like that. I'd been poisoned. I tried to raise my eyes to hers, but my gaze caught on her necklace. An age-spotted hand wrapped around the blue bauble. I forced my gaze to hers.
It was your necklace that I saw at the water's edge, I said,
the pieces coming slowly together in my addled mind. She must have dropped the locket and gone back to retrieve it, then shoved me in before I saw her there or got my hands on evidence that would have connected her to the murder. Lucinda gave a low and hearty laugh. She stroked Maggie's dingy fur.
You think you're so smart, she said. Everyone thinks I'm so dumb.
What did you put in my tea?
I struggled to clear my thoughts. Maybe the effects were reversible. Maybe there was an antidote.
Insurance,
she snarled.
Now drink up or I hurt the cat.
What?
She repositioned her hand, suggestively, around Maggie's throat.
No, stop!
I raised my hands in surrender. The world blurred and spun around me.
Don't hurt her,
I begged.
I'll drink.
It was a terrible idea, but I couldn't run, couldn't fight, and Grady was on his way, supposedly. How long was 3 minutes anyway? Hadn't it already been an hour? Maggie struggled, knocking Lucinda's hand off her neck and swinging the necklace over her chest. I gasped.
Is that where you keep it?
I was suddenly unsure what was more shocking. My recent poisoning or her cavalier behavior.
You just wear it around your neck like jewelry?
That's right, she quipped. Benedict wasn't meant to get a double dose, but Sam Smart certainly was. And when I realized you were getting close to the truth with your ridiculous pursuit, I loaded the locket up again. Can you blame me?
Yes,
I squeaked. Maggie wrestled free with a hiss and flew past me with an indignant roar.
Yow!
Lucinda shrieked. Blood streamed from fresh claw marks on her thin arm.
Finish the tea!
Her voice turned cold and demanding.
Just drink up. It will help this go faster.
This what?
My voice ratcheted another octave.
My death?
Who would want to speed up their death? The tea kettle whistled in my ear, and I spun toward the stove with a scream. A fresh flood of panic and adrenaline washed through my system. I jerked it off the burner and turned back, kettle in hand, unsure where to set it or why any of this was happening.
Why are you doing this?
I cried. I'd let her inside my cafe, thinking we could make friends. I'd wanted to make up for offending her. Meanwhile, she'd come to kill me. Lucinda turned her enraged expression on me, plowing forward at a tilt. She swiped the cleaver off my knife rack and charged me.
Drink it!
She screamed, lifting the knife overhead.
Or you're about to have a ghastly kitchen accident,
and I'll still end the cat.
I'll find that grubby thing, and I'll...
The sound of my steaming kettle colliding with her forehead was gruesome. It reverberated up my arm and in my ears as she fell to the floor in a heap, a red kettle imprint over one eyebrow.
I yelped.
The rage that had bubbled in my limbs for everyone she'd hurt had overcome me in a burst, moving my arm to stop her before I'd had time to think better of it. I released my weapon, scalding water streaming across my floor in a tiny flood that washed against Lucinda's crumpled frame. As I stared at her, the too familiar flash of red and white emergency lights registered through my windows. I sobbed with relief, slipping and sliding across the splattered planks on weird noodle legs and wrapped weak and trembling arms around my middle.
Had I killed her? Was she dead?
I thought to myself. The steady thump of footfalls on the stairs outside my door echoed through my head and heart.
Grady?
Everly!
His strong form came into view a moment before my world slanted.
I'm sorry,
I whispered through the cotton filling of my mouth.
Medic!
He yelled. I ached to tell him everything, to see his face and know things would be okay, but my brain had been disconnected, unplugged, no longer in control of my limbs or tongue.
Everly!
Grady's hands were on my face and neck.
You're gonna be okay, Swan. You hear me?
He heaved me into his arms and began to move. His words were barely a whisper against the blast of fresh sea air. I pulled in a series of shallow breaths, sipping the beloved ocean breeze and relieved at the flutter of hair across my face. Humidity clung to my skin, and the treasured scents of sand and salt air seemed to pull my eyes open. Dual carousels of emergency lights lit the darkness. A pair of ambulances blocked the path to my front porch, and Grady set me on a gurney outside the first. His truck was practically parked on my porch. He kept a hand on my shoulder as a new face drifted into view. An older gentleman wearing a stethoscope snapped a mask over my nose and mouth. The sweet taste of oxygen poured into my lungs.
I'm Tom,
the man said.
How are you feeling?
I looked at Grady and struggled to swallow.
She has poison in her necklace.
I choked through a tightening esophagus. The men exchanged looks. Grady removed a phone from his pocket and barked orders across the line. Tom flashed a light in my eyes and took my pulse. Fear swam in Grady's ethereal eyes.
How is she? BP is 66 over 50, dilated pupils, shallow breathing. I'd like to know what was in that necklace.
The ponytailed woman from Mr. Payne's crime scene appeared as if on command. Her black jacket had a Charm PD logo over the pocket, and her face was all business. She lifted a plastic bag in Grady's direction.
Lucinda's awake. This is the necklace. Traces of the medications are available for testing, but she claims it's the remnants of a prescription her late husband discontinued using last year. Which?
Tom asked. The answer was completely unfamiliar and slightly garbled by my ringing ears.
I don't know how you're still conscious,
Tom said, presumably to me, though his eyes were fixed on the needle he pressed into my vein.
This will help.
He attached a tube and bag of fluids, then popped a clip on the end of my finger and wiggled it.
You're going to be just fine, Miss Swan.
The gurney began to move. My head rocked side to side.
I'm coming with her,
Grady said. My eyes slid closed before the ambulance doors had time to shut, and I drifted to sleep with the warmth of Grady's hand heating my shoulder. Chapter 24. I swiped a wrist against my forehead, moving a bead of sweat into my hairline before it could drip onto my tray. The lunch crowd at Sun Sand and Tea had grown steadily in the 2 weeks since a lunatic woman had tried to kill me. News had traveled fast, and I seemed to be cleared of any lingering suspicions before my aunts had taken me home from the hospital. Thankfully, I hadn't killed Lucinda, but her mugshot had wound up on the gossip blog, and I was certain she wished I'd gotten the job done after seeing that photo. The goose egg and kettle burn slash imprint combo was enough to give viewers a sympathy headache, as was the resulting black eye. For a woman who'd worked so carefully on her appearance, I imagined that was its own kind of corporal punishment. I, on the other hand, had overdosed on Mr. Payne's sleeping pills. Luckily, Grady had arrived in time. Even if Lucinda hadn't managed to stab me to death, the pills could have finished me. She'd mashed half a bottle into dust and dumped them into my tea like sugar. I'd been appreciating my life in new ways since then, mostly during every breath I took. I set my tray on the table between two tanned girls. Two fruit salads and two old-fashioned sun teas. Is there anything else I can get you? The girls shook their heads and dug in. They'd chosen the right ensemble for my sun deck, bikini tops and jean shorts. They looked cool despite the rising mercury, unlike myself in capri pants and a t-shirt that clung to my every humidity-dampened curve. I didn't care what the calendar said. It might have only been the middle of May, but summer had officially arrived in Charm. The wind chimes over my front door jangled, and I spun my way back into the cafe. My heart leapt stupidly at the sight of my personal hero. Welcome to Sun Sand and Tea, I said, tugging the screen shut behind me. Grady sauntered to the counter, a trip he'd made almost daily since saving my life. Today, the collar of his dress shirt was tugged open, and his tie hung loosely around his neck like a scarf.
Not an empty seat in the house,
he said, a twinkle of pride in his eye. Or on the deck? I set a napkin in front of him. What can I get you?
How about a few minutes?
I cast my gaze around the room, checking the levels on the tea jars and making certain all my orders had been filled. Y'all, I called, drawing the room's attention. I'm going to have a walk on the deck. If you need me, I won't be long.
Police business,
Grady added. Some folks nodded. The rest went back to their conversations. I poured Grady some tea, then stripped off my apron before following him to the rear deck. Well, I asked, stopping in the corner farthest from my customers. How did it go? Wind swept through my hair, tossing it against him. I stuffed as much of it as possible behind one ear. Grady released a heavy sigh. He turned his back to the sea and hooked both elbows on the handrail behind him.
I met with both attorneys for more than an hour. The defense is trying to avoid a trial, but that won't happen. This was more like a Hail Mary.
Was she there? I asked, still unable to say the name Lucinda without flashbacks.
Yeah,
he grimaced and sucked down some tea.
She won't be able to avoid jail time after what she did to her ex-husband and Sam Smart, not to mention what she did to you.
His eyes darkened for a moment after that last line.
She admits to all of it, though she's calling Mr. Payne's death accidental. Regardless, she's going away for a while.
I guffawed. How does she suppose Mr. Payne's death was accidental? She drugged him. I crossed my arms in defense against the slew of terrifying memories begging to be relived, prepared for a colossal tale.
Apparently,
he began with a roll of his eyes.
She was slipping Benedict doses of her old diabetes medication in an attempt to keep him slightly ill so he'd need her again. She wanted to reconcile, but he didn't. So she decided to give him a little push. The drug she gave him was dangerous for someone with a heart condition, and the medicine he took for it.
How romantic, he laughed.
From what I gathered, her jewelry business was failing and she needed a lifeboat. She was on my radar long before she showed up that night. The lab sent lists of the medications found in Mr. Payne's system, and we knew that either he or Lucinda had taken each of them at one time or another. But he'd overdosed on painkillers and sleeping meds. We had no way to prove that she had been the one to put them in his tea. But we knew they met that afternoon for lunch. Without proof of her involvement, it could have easily been an accidental situation.
I wish she would have led with that at the crime scene, I deadpanned. Possible accidental overdose sounds so much better than the poison is in Everly's tea.
He wrinkled his nose. I suppose it does.
You saved my life, so I'll let it go, I smiled. So he didn't eat anything at my place because he was meeting his ex-wife for lunch. Then she rewarded him by slipping a fatal dose of crushed up old pills into his tea? And all because she wanted his money? What a waste. Lucinda could have come back from financial troubles. I'm not so sure about two murder charges.
Grady squinted against the sun. Lucinda had more debt than she could manage on her own, and a reunion with her ex would have saved her. Instead, he died and ruined her life. Her words, not mine.
I cringed. That's awful. I'd thought I'd wanted to be there and hear the details firsthand, but maybe getting the information this way was good enough. I pressed a palm to my anxious tummy.
I almost feel bad for her, Grady said. Clearly, she's touched.
He tapped his temple.
She had no idea what she was doing. We found her old pill bottle for the diabetes medication stuffed inside a coffee can and tossed in a dumpster behind her store. An entire ocean all around, and she left the pills she killed her husband with right outside a business she owns. He shook his head in wonder. When she wanted to shut Sam Smart down, she went back to her medicine cabinet and made him a whiskey and oxycodone cocktail. She tried a little harder to pull it off with Sam. The extra pills and half-emptied whiskey bottle were left on a patio table. I suppose that was meant to make it look like he got doped up and went swimming. I mean, he was fully dressed, but like I said,
he made a tiny circle around his ear with one finger.
The whole thing is a mess. She ought to plead insanity. Nothing she said today indicated otherwise.
I still can't believe she killed Sam, too, I said, my heart breaking all over again. Why did she kill Sam? That puzzle had eaten away at me, leaving me up at night for 2 weeks straight. I understood the concept of drama within couples and between exes, but I couldn't fathom a reason for her to kill Sam Smart. What was the connection there?
Sam saw Lucinda on the boardwalk with Mr. Payne on the night of his murder, so he attempted to blackmail her over it. He hatched a plan to make Lucinda his voice on the city council, promising to help her get Benedict's old position and keep his mouth shut about whatever he saw as long as she helped him get a few new real estate situations past the council. That's why the Paynes had all those blueprints. Those were projects Sam wanted approval on.
Shameless. What a partnership, I thought. Two crooks motivated to commit crimes for the sake of money. I doubt Sam could have even gotten her on the council. That's a big deal around here, and the positions aren't filled willy-nilly. Maybe Mr. and Mrs. Waters had been right, and Lucinda's big party to celebrate Mr. Payne's life was just her trying to reintroduce herself to the community and hopefully score her murdered husband's spot on the council. I felt icky just listening. I tightened my arms over my chest. So she's the one who hit me with the frying pan? Grady's gaze traveled to the place on my head where Lucinda had clobbered me.
She never expected someone to take the maps and blueprints from the trash. When she saw you making off with them during her party, she had to go after them and grab the first thing she saw on her way out to use as a weapon. She'd just bought some new things for her home that afternoon. I've got the records to prove it.
So it had been her watching from the upstairs window. I shivered. Grady rubbed a broad palm up and down my arm.
Lucinda said she couldn't trust that Sam's blackmail would end there, so she had to silence him. Plus, she didn't want to be on the council.
He dropped his hand away and smiled.
Then she pointed out that blackmail is a crime, so maybe Sam deserved what he got. The prosecutor reminded her that murder is a capital offense, and she started crying.
Yikes.
Pretty much. He rubbed both hands against his face and into his hair. That wasn't the worst of it, though.
I failed to imagine how something so convoluted and horrifying could possibly get worse.
Grady dipped his chin sharply and locked his breathtaking gaze on me. She accused me of only pursuing and apprehending her because she'd gone after you.
Oh. I struggled to concentrate through the charged silence between us. That was bad for you?
It implied that I didn't care about the murders until you were in danger. So yeah, not a great look for a new detective.
I smiled, recalling something I knew about Grady that crazy Lucinda did not. But you aren't new at this. I've read all about you online. You would have found the truth regardless.
Undoubtedly.
I laughed. See? Everyone knows it had nothing to do with me. Grady didn't smile. He clenched and popped his jaw.
I was more motivated once you were in danger.
I did a slow blink. Because you knew me personally? I suggested.
Maybe.
I fought the urge to fan my face. Had we always been standing so close? I flicked my gaze away from him, trying to unscramble my thoughts and assure we were still alone. Dozens of faces stared eagerly back. Patrons had moved to the window where they openly gawked. A few had cell phones. Even Lou peered judgmentally from the roof's peak. It's what you do, I said. You solve things. Save people. A low chuckle rumbled in Grady's chest, turning me back in his direction. An impish grin had broken over his face and he'd loosened his stance, falling back by an inch.
That's not what I was trying to say. But we seem to have an audience, so maybe we can pick this up later.
We can try, but I've told you, charm is an audience. You can't escape it. Maggie trotted into view before stopping to watch Grady and me. Her fluffy white fur had been scrubbed spotless and blown out against her will, her nails trimmed and a pink bow tied in her hair. She pretended to hate it, but I was sure the bow would have been shredded to bits by now if that was true. Our local pet groomer was clearly part magician. She batted luminescent eyes at me, and an invigorating wave of boldness overcame me. I covered the back of Grady's hand with mine. Have I told you about the free food and tea for life promotion? It's a special I offered to detectives who saved my life.
I accept.
Good. The intimacy of the moment suddenly seemed too much. I moved my hand away with a smile. I'd spent enough time being featured on our local gossip blog lately. I turned on my toes and headed back to the cafe's interior, desperate for the frigid air conditioning to cool me down. Grady followed.
Do you think it works like that with everyone who owns a business around here? Maybe I'll get free stuff everywhere soon.
I waited while he slid the patio door shut behind us. Planning to save us all, are ya?
At least you and the ice cream guy. Denver would love that.
I laughed. My phone buzzed and I freed it from my pocket, expecting a message from Aunt Clara, who liked to help with the lunch crowd. Multiple limousines spotted on Middletown Street. Celebrity visit? I showed the notification to Grady. I registered for the Town Charmer's newsfeed. He frowned. Finally, I'll be in the loop, I said. The wind chimes jingled again, and two familiar silhouettes swept inside. The short one ran directly into Grady's arms.
Daddy!
Grady raised Denver overhead like an airplane.
Buddy!
The closing door balanced the lighting, and I smiled at Denise in her perfect Tiffany blue sundress. Water? I guessed.
Yes, please.
Her smile was unusually tight, and her voice mildly strained.
Grady, can I speak with you for a moment?
He lowered Denver onto his hip. The smile he'd worn at first sight of his son was gone, replaced by the blank cop face that made me nervous. I guessed he'd heard the fear in her tone, too. I took my time getting 2 new napkins, a water and a lemonade, my newest recipe created just for Denver Hayes. A woman at the counter waved to me. "What's in your honey vanilla tea?" I pulled a fully laminated menu from the pile behind me and ferried it to her fast. "The teas are in alphabetical order. Ingredients are listed to the right of each." Mr. Payne had been right. Folks wanted to know what they were consuming, and I'd needed to let go of all the secrecy. How I made my products was proprietary, but what went in them shouldn't be. The door opened again, and Aunt Clara walked inside, waving a handkerchief dramatically overhead. "Hello!" Half the patrons stopped eating to welcome her. I returned to Denise and Grady with ears primed for whatever news had made the most beautiful girl on Earth look like she'd seen a shark. She stood so close to Grady that only Denver's small frame separated them. "She's here," Denise whispered. I inched closer to the pair sharing a secret. "Grady?" I asked, suddenly willing to give up a prime eavesdropping situation for his benefit. "Do you want to talk privately?" I asked. "If so, I bet Denver would like to meet Lou the Seagull." "Yeah!" Denver swung his body toward mine, nearly plummeting from Grady's grip. "Seagulls are cool." I hoisted him onto my hip and moved to the deck again, the warm weight of a sweet boy in my arms and a deep sense of gratitude in my heart. Denver had taken a liking to me the day Grady had brought him over for a visit after I was released from the hospital. We'd talked about horses, and I'd shared some local legends about the Spanish galleons that had crashed against our shores centuries ago, spilling mustangs onto the land. Those same lucky horses' ancestors ran wild here today. Denver had eaten up every word exactly as I had when Grandma first shared those stories with me. Aunt Clara stopped me short of making it to the rear deck. "What's with the line of limousines outside? I have expected to find Rod Stewart in here." I turned for the cafe entrance. "First, let's see some limos," I told Denver. He rested his cheek on my shoulder.
"Boring."
Grady and Denise were already on the porch when I got there. I gave a long whistle. Aunt Clara and the community blogger were wrong. There wasn't a parade of limousines. There was one limousine and a convoy of government SUVs out front. "What's going on?" I asked Grady and Denise, hefting Denver higher. I fixed Grady with a curious stare. "Are those vehicles here for you?" He and Denise exchanged a look. Grady had been a big deal at the U.S. Marshals Service. It was plausible this was about him, wasn't it? Maybe they wanted him back? "If you'd like, I can prepare something for everyone. Invite them inside. It's no problem. Heck, I'd make Thanksgiving dinner if you wanted. Anything to know who was behind the black-tinted glass and how they were connected to Grady." "Denise?" I asked, pressing the weak link. I doubted this was about her, but she knew exactly what was happening. I could see it on her face and in her rigid stance. She'd come here to warn him, asking to speak with him moments before the caravan arrived. "What's happening?" She shot her arms out for Denver. "I'll take him to her," she said, putting up a bright but very fake smile. "Ready, sweetie?" Denver went to Denise without a fuss. He turned happy eyes back to me.
"First Grandma, then I meet Lou. Right, Everly?"
"Absolutely," I agreed, completely befuddled. "Maybe we can even find something to feed him."
"Cool."
Denise squared her shoulders and descended my porch stairs with the enthusiasm of a funeral procession. Grady shifted his weight and locked long tan fingers over narrow hips.
"Did he say Grandma?"
I asked, eyeballing Denise and Denver from behind. Whose grandma comes with an escort of government SUVs? And why wasn't Grady going with them?
"Yep."
"Your mother?" I guessed. It would explain his wild success at the Marshals Service. Grady mindlessly thumbed the space on his left ring finger where a wedding band had briefly lived.
"No."
"Your wife's mother?" Grady groaned.
She's a story for another day.
He rubbed his palms against his thighs, then made the same slow descent Denise had made before him. I craned my neck for a look inside the limo when the door swung open. A pair of thin legs appeared, complete with black heels and a pair of reaching hands well appointed in diamonds. The woman never leaned forward as she helped her grandson and his au pair inside. Grady gave me one last look before joining his family inside the vehicle. A moment later, the convoy purred to life and pulled away in a strangely formal parade. I wandered back into Sun Sand and Tea with a head full of new questions. Aunt Clara looked up from a table near the window, a sweating pitcher of tea poised in her hand.
"What was that about?"
she asked. "A story for another day," I said, repeating Grady's words. "A story I plan to get to the bottom of as soon as possible," I thought to myself. I smiled my way through the crowded room, thankful for a bustling cafe, wacky loving aunts, and our tight-knit seaside community. It was probably too soon to think it, but I was thankful for Grady in my life, too. Mostly, I was glad for a future where anything was possible, and all my best adventures were still ahead. Summer Strawberry and Peach Tea. Nothing compliments a hot summer day like this Swan family favorite, so dive in and enjoy. Prep time, 20 minutes. Yields, 16 servings. 10 cups cold water divided. 1 cup strawberry preserves. 8 herbal peach tea bags. 12 fresh strawberries, cored and sliced. Ice. Using a medium saucepan, add 4 cups of water, strawberry preserves, and peach tea bags, and bring to a boil. Remove from heat and steep 15 minutes. Pour in remaining 6 cups of cold water. Remove tea bags and let cool completely. Then add strawberry slices and stir. Refrigerate until ready to serve. Pour over ice. Iced chai latte. Time for a midday pick-you-up? Try Everly's Chai Tea Latte. Caffeinated tea with a latte to love. Prep time, 20 minutes. Yields, 10 servings. 10 cups milk, 2% or skim. 5 tablespoons refined granulated sugar. 10 chai tea bags. 1/2 teaspoon cardamom. Cinnamon, ground for garnish. In a large saucepan, bring the milk, sugar, tea bags, and cardamom to a boil, stirring often. Remove from heat and steep 5 minutes. Remove tea bags and chill in the refrigerator until ready to serve. Serve over ice and garnish with cinnamon. Carolina Cucumber Sandwiches. Need something light and refreshing after a long day at the beach in the sun, or something to serve at your next garden party? Try Everly's Carolina Cucumber Sandwiches for the perfect summer fix. Prep time, 20 minutes. Yields, 48 sandwiches. 1 cucumber, seedless, peeled and thinly sliced. 1 8-ounce package cream cheese, softened to room temperature. 2 tablespoons fresh dill, chopped. 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder. 1/4 teaspoon celery salt. Dash of Worcestershire sauce. 1 loaf pumpernickel bread, thinly sliced without crust. Splash of freshly squeezed lemon juice. Pinch of freshly ground black pepper to taste. Line cucumber slices on paper towels to drain. In a medium bowl, mix the cream cheese, dill, garlic powder, celery salt, and Worcestershire sauce until well blended and creamy. Arrange 2 slices of the pumpernickel bread on your workspace and spread a thin layer of the mixture onto each slice. Cut the slices into circles with a cookie cutter. Center a cucumber slice onto each sandwich. Spritz with lemon juice and dash with pepper to taste. Serve open-faced. The End. This book was read for you by Therese Plummer, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Live and Let Chai by Bree Baker. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play,
Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.